Hey, Friday Night Lights fans. It's Not Only Football, Friday Night Lights and Beyond is an episode-by-episode discussion of the hit TV series Friday Night Lights, hosted by yours truly, Scott Porter, who played Jason Street on the show, and my two wonderful co-hosts.
Me, Zach Guilford, a.k.a. Matt Saracen.
And me, Mae Whitman, a.k.a. someone who wasn't on the show, but really, really loves it a lot.
We will also bring on some special guests, answer your questions, and tell you about what's going on in our lives today.
It's Not Only Football. Friday Night Lights and Beyond is available now wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 290 of the True Crime All the Time Unsolved podcast. I'm Mike Ferguson, and with me, as always, is my partner in true crime, Mike Gibson. Gibby, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good, man. How about yourself?
Doing really well.
Good.
Much better than last week.
Yeah.
Last week was rough for me.
It was
rough. The time change, I don't know what it was. But we've got a really good unsolved episode for everyone. Before we get into that, let's go ahead and give our Patreon shout-outs. We had Sandy Petals Nantucket jump out at our highest level.
Well, thank you, Sandy.
Sarah Cloutier.
That's a French, just if you didn't know that.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Cloutier.
Eric Church, the country singer.
Yeah. Hey, Eric.
Cassie Cassidy.
Well, I like that. Cassidy.
Rob Pitcher.
Hey, Rob.
Samantha Hing.
What's going on, Samantha?
Laura Verlinick.
Ah, Laura.
Eugene Saveri.
Hey, Eugene.
Roxana Clark.
Appreciate that, Roxana.
Christina Reisbeck.
Hey, Reisbeck.
Henry Roberts.
There's Henry.
Brandon Sims.
What's going on, Brandon?
Jamie in Wonderland.
Well, thank you, Jamie.
Franny Lynn.
Well, hi, Franny.
Patty Fortner.
Hi, Patty.
Dylan O2.
I like that, Dylan. Be the O2 that you always wanted to be.
Serene Hesketh.
Hey, Serene.
Zoe Wojtek.
I appreciate that, Zoe.
Jody C.
Hey, thank you, Jody.
Lynn Watt.
Hi, Lynn.
Jason jumped out at our highest level.
There's the main man, Jason.
And last but not least, Heather C.
All right. Hi, Heather.
And then if we go back into the vault, this week we selected Megan Smith.
Thank you, Megan.
So we appreciate the new support, the continued support. We also had great PayPal donations from Deanna Johnson.
Hey, Deanna.
Lana Robeson.
Howdy, Lana.
And Sally Karp.
Oh, I appreciate that, Sally.
So thanks to everyone so much. Gibbs, right now on True Crime All the Time, we have an episode out. We're headed all the way over to Yemen to talk about the Sana'a Ripper, a guy named Muhammad Adam Omar. Now, this is a guy who was suspected of murdering up to 16 women in Yemen, maybe many others in different countries. Essentially, he worked as a morgue technician at a university, and he lured female students with the thought that he was going to help train them, but then he would murder them.
Almost the perfect cover-up.
Almost. All right, buddy, are you ready to get into this episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved?
I am ready.
We are talking about the disappearance of Tara Calico. On September 20th, 1988, Tara Calico went for her daily bike ride. But she never came home. 34 years later, her disappearance remains unsolved. Tara Lee Calico was born on February 28th, 1969. She was 19 years old when she went missing. If she were alive today, she would be 53 years old. Tara lived in Rio Communities, a residential area east of Belen, New Mexico. She lived with her mother and stepfather, Patty and John Dole. John had helped raise Tara since she was 6 years old. She and her family moved from Albuquerque to Rio Communities in 1979. I have been to New Mexico. I've been to Albuquerque. I think I've told you before. It's one of my favorite cities.
Yeah, I've been there. Well, I drove through it once before, and it was very colorful.
Yeah, I didn't explore it a lot, but I remember kind of being in the city, looking up at these snow-capped mountains. I just thought it was a very beautiful place. Tara was described as very active. She enjoyed running and biking. She liked to keep a busy schedule, and she was the type of person who made daily to-do lists. I'm very familiar with those types of people. I live with one of those types of individuals.
I've seen those lists on your refrigerator.
Yeah, my wife is a real to-do list maker. It calms her. It soothes her to make the list and then check things off.
Yeah.
At least that's the way she explains it to me.
It got a little ridiculous when she started handing me some lists.
When you walked in the door?
Yeah.
Here's one for you. According to the Albuquerque Tribune, John said about Tara, she didn't have time to fool around. There was just so much she wanted to fit into a day. She was like a little machine. It was amazing.
I kind of admire people like that, that just like are go-getters and they get things done. They're very productive all day long.
Yeah, that is not me.
Me neither.
Yeah, I am very productive in what I would call spurts.
I would call you the king of procrastination.
That is very true.
Yeah.
When I'm under a deadline, that's when I really shine.
Yeah.
If you tell me I have 4 days to do something, I'm waiting until day 3 7/8.
Exactly.
To start on it, and I will get it done. It'll be great.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be top notch.
But that's another thing that drives my wife crazy, because she likes to knock everything out and not be stressed. Sometimes I need that stress to really get the creative juices flowing.
It's how you thrive.
It is. It's not great. I'm not advocating or telling people that that's how they should live their lives, because it is very stressful. Tara graduated from Bellin High School in 1987. She was the manager of the school track team. She worked for the First National Bank of Bellin until she attended college full time. She was a sophomore at the University of New Mexico at Valencia. Tara earned a high GPA, and she planned to become either a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Not bad fields to get into.
No, not at all. But, you know, what I'm taking from all of these descriptions of Tara, you know, very organized.
Right.
Very driven, intelligent, worked hard. Okay, if you're intelligent and you work hard, that's how you maintain a high GPA. She also had some goals. I mean, she had some things figured out that she wanted to do. According to the Albuquerque Tribune, Tara was fluent in French, played musical instruments, and enjoyed a healthy lifestyle.
Sounds like me. You know, I can play all kind of instruments, and I can speak many different languages. And
you enjoy a healthy lifestyle.
Exactly.
Patty said about her daughter, "We hear so much about kids running away. That was not the situation in her case. She's worked since she was 14. She bought her own clothes since she was 15. She was very independent." Tara's friend Bernard Nixon told the Albuquerque Tribune, "She was very independent. She definitely has a mind of her own. She's extremely bright and resourceful. She has a very good disposition and a friendly manner about her. She has everything you'd look for in a friend. She's a unique individual. We're hoping we can get her back."
So we're hearing a lot of the same things mentioned by friends and family about her character.
Yeah, and it's all good stuff, as you would expect it to be. I have no doubt that she was an amazing individual. What I will say is, if someone had something negative to say, I just doubt that they would say it.
No, you're right. It's not the time to air your dirty laundry, right?
No. I'm not saying there was any to air.
Right. But if there was.
If there was, in these unsolved cases that we do, I just can't imagine someone coming out and saying, "Yeah, I know she's missing, but she wasn't all that great."
Yeah.
It's probably not going to happen. It has happened. We've had some.
We have, yeah.
Where people have bad-mouthed the actual victim in an unsolved case. But more often than not, people just would not say that.
As if anything ever happened to me, I know you would never go into all the things I've done wrong.
No, because I'd probably be implicated somehow. Yeah. I don't want any part of that. According to the Albuquerque Journal, part of Tara's daily fitness routine was to ride her bike around 35 miles. 35 miles is a long way.
That's a lot of biking.
So not to make myself look bad, but I did buy, you know, one of those fancy bikes, indoor bicycles.
Yeah, I have to walk around it every time I come here.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Yeah, extremely nice.
And I had all these great ideas that I was really going to put some miles on this bike.
You really did.
The first time I did 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I could barely walk the next day. And I understand you need to build yourself up. I haven't quite gotten there. I'm just saying 35 miles a day, that is some serious exercise.
It really is.
Tara's usual bike route went along New Mexico 47, southeast of Rio Communities, toward Mountain Air. According to the Valencia County Sheriff, she would ride that route daily. She'd ride south on New Mexico 47 about 9 miles until she got to the railroad tracks, then turn around and come back. Her mother, Patty, said that she and Tara used to bike New Mexico 47 together. But after a few unpleasant encounters with motorists, she urged Tara to stop biking on the highway. Tara told her, "Mom, I can't run my life worrying about what's around every corner." Tara's friend Bernard Nixon encouraged her to carry mace or a knife, but Tara didn't want to and said, "Things happen for the best. If something's going to happen, it's meant to happen." Now, you and I talk a lot about being prepared, right? We have that saying, keep your head on a swivel.
We do.
And I do think that's very important. But a lot of times I add, you know, you can't live your life paranoid about everything. You should be careful. You should look out for yourself. But I'm also a big believer that you can't let every what if stop you from doing the things you want to do.
Yeah, otherwise you're never going to do anything, right? You're going
to... Well, you could always find a reason to say, well, I shouldn't do this because something bad could happen.
Right.
Tara had been dating her boyfriend for about 6 weeks when she went missing. The following is a timeline of the morning of Tara's disappearance. Now, I'll put it out there right now. We used a lot of sources in this episode, and those sources differ slightly on times and estimated distances. So, you know, we did our best to compile all that we could find.
We did.
On September 20th, 1988, at 9:30 a.m., Tara left her house on Brug Street for a bike ride. Her bike had a flat tire, so she took her mom's bike that day. The bike is described as a neon pink Huffy bike with yellow control cables and sidewalls. Before Tara went on her bike ride, she laid out a tennis outfit and books for her class later that day. Tara was last seen wearing a white t-shirt with First National Bank of Bellin printed on it, white shorts with green stripes, white socks, and white sneakers. She wore a gold butterfly ring with a diamond insert, a gold amethyst stone ring, and she had on gold loop earrings. So that is a very, very specific description of what she was wearing.
Absolutely it is. I was sitting here thinking, not only did she ride her bike that day, she had plans to go play tennis. Talking about a very athletic person.
From 11 to 11:30 a.m., residents of Shoal saw Tara riding on what was described as a desolate portion of New Mexico 47, about 5 miles east of Bellin. According to Bill Roach, Valencia County Undersheriff, they were used to seeing Tara on the road because of her normal biking routine. Two ranch hands reported seeing Tara riding north on New Mexico 47 back to Rio Communities around 11:30 a.m.
I think this underscores just how big of a routine this was for her, that people were so used to seeing her day in and day out.
Around 11:45 a.m., 7 witnesses saw Tara on the return part of her bike ride. 5 of the 7 witnesses saw what was described as a 1953 Ford pickup, either dirty white or light gray, with a homemade white camper shell following Tara. Tara was also said to have been wearing headphones. According to the Doe Network, The truck followed Tara down an unpopulated stretch of highway. No one saw Tara being abducted, and the bike Tara was riding has never been found. On the day she went missing, Tara was worried about staying on schedule, and she asked her mother to pick her up if she wasn't home by 12 p.m. Tara had plans to play tennis with her boyfriend at 12:30, and she also had class at 4 p.m. So she was very, very busy.
Yeah.
Mentioned it earlier, before she left for the bike ride, she not only laid out her tennis outfit, but she also laid out her stuff for class.
That's how you do it if you're a very organized person. I'm going to lay my clothes out for tomorrow.
Which some people do.
Yeah.
A lot of people do. I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow. So how would I know what to lay out? I don't know what tomorrow brings.
You wear the same thing every day anyway. Just lay out the same thing.
I do. Patty left to look for Tara at 12:05 p.m. She didn't find her on the usual bike route. Later that afternoon, she and Tara's friends looked for her again. Patty called the hospital, the rescue unit, and then the sheriff's office to report Tara missing. Within 5 hours, Tara's name was in the National Crime Information Center database with a notification that foul play was suspected. So, to me, there's two things here. First is something that we've talked about quite a bit. You know, it's that parents' worry that maybe starts small. Okay, she was supposed to be here. I didn't see her. And it grows. It grows as both time passes and also you look different places and you don't find her.
Right.
Until, you know, it really gets to a crescendo. And you're like, we got to call the police.
Yeah.
And then the second thing to me is how quickly, you know, within 5 hours, her name is in a database. And also with this notification that, okay, foul play is suspected.
Which wasn't always the typical response from law enforcement back then, right? 1988?
No, I did think, given the time frame that this story takes place in, it's even more remarkable to me that this all happened so quickly. Let's not forget, Tara was 19 years old. How many cases have we done where law enforcement has said, okay, family member, I get it, you're worried, but the person you're worried about is an adult.
That's right.
Who can make their own decisions. They can disappear if they want to. Obviously, things happen very differently in this situation. Police took it seriously, and things started to happen. It was rainy and windy on the day that Tara went missing, so there is a good chance, it's been said by many, that some evidence might have been washed away. On September 21st, Valencia County deputies, the state police search and rescue team, and volunteers searched for Tara. Patty found Tara's Boston cassette tape by the side of the road, about 3 miles from home, on the opposite side of the highway. Boston was pretty popular.
I love Boston.
Especially in the 1980s.
It was that album back then, you know, had the spaceship on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Was an amazing album. I don't know what it was called, but it was amazing.
Shocking.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was called either, but it's shocking that you don't know since you brought it up, and it was so amazing.
Yeah. I just remember hearing how the members of the band were actually students at MIT.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So they were smart.
Exactly.
It looked as though Tara dropped the cassette tape while riding away from home. There were bike tracks near the cassette tape and marks that were said to have resembled a scuffle or skids. The bike tracks were found on the north side of the shoulder of the highway near the cassette tape. It seemed as though Tara had turned around and was heading away from home. So I take from this, Gibbs, that the theory is that she was on her way home, and for whatever reason, she decided to turn around, and she was heading the opposite way, away from home. Now, what was the reason? Did she see someone that she thought she needed to get away from? We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different possibilities, right? Maybe somebody passed her and turned around, and she said, I don't like that. I'm going to turn myself around and head in a different direction. Who knows?
According to the Albuquerque Tribune, Investigators found bike tire scuff marks on the road, according to Undersheriff Bill Roach. A broken taillight lens, possibly from a bike, was also found. The Albuquerque Journal reported that the marks in the ground looked like the bike had been dragged off the side of the road and then back onto the road. The police followed the tracks about 200 yards off the road. The cassette tape was discovered about 100 yards from the bike tracks. Footprints leading to and from the area indicated that a scuffle might have occurred there. So we've got some information. We don't know what it all means. You know, I go back to these tire marks. Okay, that's one thing. This broken taillight that could possibly be a bike taillight. And I think that leads you down the path of, you know, was she possibly hit?
Exactly.
Causing the taillight to bust. Could that be the reason why the bike was dragged from the road off the road?
Kind of a hit and run gone bad.
Possibly. Late on September 21st, searchers found some ground that had been disturbed on the road from New Mexico 47 to the John F. Kennedy campground. They thought it might be a shallow grave, but nothing was there. There were also car tracks and a fresh oil slick near the bike tracks, which indicated Tara might have been forcefully abducted. On September 22nd, the search expanded to include the John F. Kennedy campground 15 miles from Rio communities and north along a 10-mile stretch of the Manzano Expressway from Rio communities to Tome. There was an aerial search and investigators used an infrared device, but they didn't detect Tara. And they didn't detect any remains. According to the Albuquerque Journal, approximately 60 law enforcement officers and volunteers searched for Tara and the bike she was riding. According to Sheriff Lawrence Romero, everyone we talked to says Tara is dependable and reliable. And that's why we have cause to pull out all the stops to find her right away.
So it sounds like they're all on the same page that something out of the ordinary had to happen here. This is not Tara trying to run away or anything like that. Something bad must have happened.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about this statement by this sheriff. I got to be honest with you. You know, I get it. She was dependable and reliable, which leads you to believe she would not have run away. But, you know, I think you can take that and turn it around and say, okay, if people didn't say she was dependable and reliable, we wouldn't pull out all the stops to find her. So it's not a great statement. I understand what he's saying. I think if it was me, I would have said it a little differently. True Crime All the Time Unsolved is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to Gibby and I talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save over $700 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year. So you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at Progressive.com to join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National annual average insurance savings by new customer survey. Who saved with Progressive between June 2020 and May 2021. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Cherie Warren was a young mother looking for a fresh start. Recently divorced, she had moved out, found a great new job, and even found a new boyfriend. She was happy for the first time in a long time. But on a crisp October evening, after a long day, Cherie said goodbye to her coworkers, left the office, and was never heard from again. All eyes quickly turned to her ex-husband. He had previously lured another woman into the woods, beating her with a tire iron. But there was another man that piqued the interest of investigators, Cherie's new boyfriend. He was a former reserve police officer with a dark history of sexual violence. The two men closest to Cherie swore they loved her and promised to protect her, but did one of them murder her? In season 3 of the hit true crime podcast, Cold, host Dave Colley digs into what really happened to Cherie. Hey, Prime members, listen to the Amazon Music exclusive podcast, Cold, in the Amazon Music app. Download the app today. On the night of September 22nd, Sheriff Romero received a phone call from a psychic who said she believed Tara was alive and being held captive near a stream in the Manzano Mountains. We've done a lot of cases, and in many of them, you have a psychic or multiple psychics offer up their help. I think it's a mixed bag, probably, on whether, you know, law enforcement agencies even entertain what they're saying or follow up on it or believe it. I don't know. I don't know how most law enforcement agencies think when a psychic reaches out to them and says, here's what I think.
And I think probably later in the case, if some of these cases go on and they don't become solved, that maybe they entertain what psychics have to say more than probably early on.
Oh, you mean once they've run out of leads entirely? Yeah, I'm sure of that. I'm not putting down psychics not in any all. Way. I'm really just kind of wondering how law enforcement views them and what they have to offer.
My thought would be welcome any potential lead, and you know, if you can investigate it, investigate it.
Well, that's the thing. Do you have the manpower to investigate everything? I think in almost every case, you have to prioritize. So where in the hierarchy would that information fall, I guess is my question. According to the Albuquerque Tribune, on September 23rd, 1988, the Air Force joined the search for Tara. The state police pulled out of the search after 2 days because there was no evidence that Tara was still in the area. A search and rescue team was sent to the desert to look for Tara. Patty believed that Tara may have dropped the cassette tape to leave a trail of evidence. She told the Albuquerque Tribune, "I know Tara would have had the presence of mind to leave something we could find and know it was hers." And that would be a very smart thing to do.
It would be.
If you were being taken, could you drop something that you know your family would recognize as yours?
Yeah, and to the point they would think they would never just drop this here on accident.
It had to have been deliberate. It was a clue for us to and or for the police. On the 24th, news outlets announced a $4,000 reward for information about Tara's disappearance. The reward money was eventually increased to $6,800. On September 24th, three unidentified hunters underwent hypnosis after they told Valencia County officers that they might have seen a truck following Tara Calico. They were returning from a hunting expedition when they saw a truck following Tara southeast of Rio Communities. According to Romero, the men were southbound, and Tara in the truck were headed in the opposite direction. The men couldn't agree on the truck's color, but they were certain the girl they saw was Tara.
Sounds like a promising lead.
It does. My question is for you. If you were in this scenario, would you consent to undergoing hypnosis?
For reasons I can't state, I would not be able to.
You're consent. Not allowed.
Yes.
You're not allowed. I've never been hypnotized, so I can't say how much I believe in it one way or the other. I have no experience with it whatsoever. I think if you told me that a young girl was missing and I could possibly help,
right,
I would like to think that, yes, I would sign up for that.
Yeah, same here.
But I get it. You're in a different situation.
I am.
Legally.
Yeah. But I do like the thought about that. And I think I would love to try to be hypnotized here. But I'd be afraid of what you would say to me and how I would act if I heard a certain word.
Oh, there would be some hidden underlying thing put in there for sure.
That's what I'd be worried about.
On the night of the 24th, searchers found pieces of Tara's Sony Walkman's plastic window near the John F. Kennedy campground entrance. After this discovery, 150 more searchers went to the area the next day.
Man, I love my Sony Walkman back in the day.
They were great.
They were.
I mean, before the iPod, obviously that was a technological advancement.
Yeah.
But there's something about the Sony Walkman. It just brings back a flood of great memories.
Oh, yeah. But they're on it, right? I mean, 150 people were showing up because
they found something.
Something.
On the 28th, psychic Joanne Donner led sheriff's officers to areas south of Rio communities where she believed Tara could be found. But the search was unsuccessful. Donner directed Sheriff Romero to the Burris Ranch off New Mexico 47. She believed Tara would be found close to northern Socorro County or in the foothills of the Manzano Mountains near US 60 and around the entrance to the Game and Fish Preserve in Socorro County. So, you know, back to our conversation about how would authorities view this information.
Yeah.
Obviously, they took her up on her offer. Now, it proved to be unsuccessful, but they went with it. The reward for information eventually increased to $17,000 after an unidentified person added $10,000 to the reward. Sheriff Romero announced the department's intentions to release a composite sketch of a possible suspect. And it was really these three hunters who helped create the sketch. They reported seeing one man in a pickup truck following Tara. According to Sheriff Romero, a new witness also came forward with information about the case. According to the Albuquerque Journal, the release of the composite sketch was put on hold to allow this other witness who came forward, who saw the suspect, to undergo hypnotherapy. The fourth witness came forward on September 27th. Sheriff Romero said, "We do have some leads and a few clues and are continuing to do everything we can to find Tara." On October 25th, Romero said that detectives were still following up on what he called concrete leads provided by the person who might have been the last to see Tara. Based on this witness's statement, investigators believe that at least two people were involved.
So this has to be a big deal. The three hunters told authorities that they saw one person following her that day. Now we have this fourth witness who is telling authorities there might be two.
Yeah, to me, it's either adding additional information or it's muddying the waters. And it really comes down to the veracity of that information, right? If there really is two people, okay, now we're looking for two. But if there really wasn't two people, now you're sending police off into maybe the wrong direction.
And now you just sidetracked us.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
On December 1st, officers, including an aquatic search and rescue team, searched a drainage canal. They didn't find anything. The Albuquerque Journal reported that according to Valencia Sheriff's Captain Ray Flores, an informant told the Albuquerque police that she heard from a friend that two men kidnapped Tara and murdered her, then dumped her in a ditch. Detectives interviewed the informant. The informant said that her friend identified the two alleged murderers. Officers had their addresses, but could not locate them. On June 15th, 1989, an extremely disturbing Polaroid picture was found at a convenience store parking lot in Port St. Joe, Florida. A woman picked up the photo and reported that a white van had been parked in that spot before she found the picture. The picture shows a young woman and a boy lying on sheets and a blue-striped pillow. Their mouths are covered by duct tape, and their hands are tied behind their backs. According to the Charlie Project, the picture was taken in the back of a white Toyota cargo van with no windows, manufactured in the late 1980s. Also visible in the picture is a copy of the novel, My Sweet Audrina by V.C. Andrews, a plastic cup, and a squirt gun. V.C. Andrews was Tara's favorite author. A phone number is written on the book's spine, but some of the numbers are illegible. Experts eventually determined that the number could be 300 possible numbers, and 57 of those were determined to be valid phone numbers. Polaroid officials said that the photo had to have been taken after May 1989 because that particular type of film wasn't available until then. According to the Charlie Project, the police believe that the girl in the picture was seen walking on the beach in Port St. Joe shortly before the Polaroid was found. Witnesses said that this girl was with several unidentified white males who appeared to be giving her verbal orders. Some believe that the boy in the picture was Michael Henley Jr. Michael got separated from his father on April 21st, 1988, while they were camping in the Oso Ridge area of the Zuni Mountains in New Mexico. They were on a turkey hunting trip. 400 people searched for Michael for a week. The search ended on April 28th, and a missing persons report was filed with the National Child Find Program. On July 28th, 1989, the photo was shown on the show, A Current Affair. Relatives called Patty and said that the girl in the photo looked like Tara. According to the Santa Fe New Mexican, Patty saw a tape of the program. At first, she wasn't sure the girl was Tara because she used to keep herself fixed up. This is what Patty said. And she had a permanent in her hair. Before the perm, without the makeup, I got out the old pictures and it's her. And if this part sounds familiar, it's because we did this case about 4 years ago, I think. It was episode 72 about this mysterious Polaroid picture. Now, we have to talk about it again here because it comes up. It is linked by a lot of people with the case of Tara Calico. We just said her mom saw the picture and said, that's her.
Right.
She believes it's her daughter, Tara. But the other thing I want to talk about is this potential that the boy in the picture is Michael Henley Jr., right? The picture was taken in Port St. Joe, or found in Port St. Joe, right, believed to be taken there. Michael Henley Jr., if he is the boy in the photo, went missing from New Mexico, the same state where Tara went missing.
Right.
So there's a tie there, possibly. Sarah's friend Cynthia Tafoya told the Associated Press that the book beside the young woman in the picture, written by V.C. Andrews, was Tara's favorite book. So we already said V.C. Andrews was Tara's favorite author.
Right.
Now this friend comes forward and says, not only is that her favorite author, that specific book is her favorite book.
When you get things like that, right? It looks like her. That's her favorite book. I mean, your mind's going to race 100 different ways, right? And say, it's her.
Well, at the very least, you can see why this Polaroid picture is linked by many to the disappearance of Tara Calico.
Yeah, for sure.
In early August 1989, the composite sketch of the suspect involved in Tara's case was released. On August 7th, Sheriff's Captain Ray Flores announced that at least four locals were wanted for questioning in connection with Tara's case. The police knew the location of one person. The four leads came from the publication of the composite sketch. Over 100 people called to say they might recognize the man in the drawing. And wow, we have talked about this a number of times as it relates to composite sketches. Number one, it comes down to the artist's ability and really the ability of the person relaying the information. Those two combined.
Go hand in hand.
But what I will say is, how often do people see a composite sketch on the news or in the newspaper and say, you know what? I really think that looks like Joe.
Yeah, exactly.
It turns out not to be Joe.
But it kind of looked like Joe.
But it kind of does. Also, I think there's sometimes the propensity for some people to kind of will it in their mind into someone.
Yeah, who they think it should be or might be.
Or could be.
Could be.
Yeah.
Just like your favorite show, The Office, when...
when Dwight,
yes,
was the sketch. Yeah, and I'm not even saying it's like out of nefarious means. It's just, I mean, that's kind of how the mind works sometimes. Sometimes we make things into something that maybe aren't really quite there.
Right.
That same month, Tara and Michael's parents flew to Florida to meet with investigators about the photo. After a current affair broadcast the photo, hundreds of families called. Florida investigators believed that the Doyles and the Henleys were the strongest leads. Port St. Joe Police Chief Carl Richter said the portion of the van visible in the photo might belong to a Toyota. Cibola County Sheriff Ed Craig checked with van dealers in Albuquerque and believed it was an American-made van or one of two foreign-made vans. According to the New York Times, Marty Henley, Michael's mom, spent 2 hours looking at the photo. She was almost certain that the boy in the photo was her son. Michael Henley said he wanted the FBI to look at the photo. If it's not Michael, it's a little boy who looks very much like him. The New York Times wrote that Pat was convinced the girl in the picture was Tara. She also said that she had a message for the abductor. Strange as it may seem, I would thank him for keeping her alive. I would thank him for taking care of her, seeing that she's fed, seeing that she's clean. I hope he values her life as much as we do. And to me, this is not strange. It's very, very smart. It's calculating.
It really is.
You've seen this done in movies, and it always comes out as wanting to humanize the person that's been kidnapped as much as you can.
Yeah, you're trying to keep your child alive.
And you want the captor to see them the way that you do.
Because if they do, there's less chance that they're going to hurt them.
Yes, exactly. And we've actually heard of that in episodes that we've done on TCAT, where, you know, when it's all said and done, serial killers have said, you know, I killed X number of people, but I didn't kill this person.
Yeah.
Because I liked them. They were nice to me. They saw them as human and they didn't hurt them. Now, I'm not saying it plays out that way in every case, but we've seen examples.
It increases your odds of surviving.
Absolutely. The FBI agreed to compare other pictures to the photo in the Washington lab. The FBI Albuquerque office said that they were providing technical help and that they would enter the case as soon as an abduction was confirmed. Chief Carl Richter and the parents were worried that the kidnapper could hurt the kids in the photo after the news came out. He said it could be devastating. Whoever has the children, if he hears about it, they may retaliate. It's a possibility. So that is also true.
Very true.
Right? It's a double-edged sword. You want to get this information out. You want to get the photo out.
Yeah.
Because you're hoping that somebody has seen these children somewhere along the way and will call in a tip, maybe give a license plate number. But then there's that other side of the coin that if this perpetrator knows that this picture is being circulated, does the perpetrator then think, there's too much heat?
Yeah, I've got to get out from underneath this as soon as I can.
And unfortunately, that could include, you know, hurting these children. On August 11th, 1989, authorities in New York determined that a possible suspect in the disappearance of Tara Calico and Michael Henley was in prison when they went missing. Edward Bentley was arrested for attempting to abduct a 10-year-old girl in Stamford, New York. The girl was riding her bicycle. He was driving a white van. Bentley also resembled the man in the composite sketch. The police checked to see if there was a connection between him and the disappearances of Michael and Tara, but Bentley was in the Arizona State Prison at the time that they both went missing. The Albuquerque Journal contacted an employee in the record section of the prison and confirmed that Bentley was in prison from March 25th to October 14th, 1988. True Crime All the Time Unsolved is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Let's face it, sometimes multitasking can be overwhelming, like when your favorite podcast is playing and the person next to you is talking and your car fan is blasting, all while you're trying to find the perfect parking spot. But then again, sometimes multitasking is easy, like quoting with Progressive Insurance. They do the hard work of comparing rates so you can find a great rate that works for you, even if it's not with them. Give their nifty comparison tool a try, and you might just find getting the rate and coverage you deserve is easy. All you need to do is visit Progressive's website to get a quote with all the coverages you want, like comprehensive and collision coverage or personal injury protection. Then you'll see Progressive's direct rate, and their tool will provide options from other companies all lined up and ready to compare. So it's simple to choose the rate and coverages you like. Press play on comparing auto rates. Quote at Progressive.com to join the over 27 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. The FBI, in analyzing this photograph, could not determine if the girl was Tara or if the boy was Michael Henley. On August 30th, 1989, an FBI spokesman said that lab tests to determine if the people in the picture were Tara and Michael were inconclusive. According to Patty, in an Albuquerque Journal article, one FBI agent said that because the young woman's legs were shaved, she couldn't have been a victim of kidnapping.
Well, that's kind of a stupid comment to make.
I think it is too. Now, that's according to Patty. I'm not sure why she would lie about that. And if an FBI agent made that comment, it does seem very strange to me.
Right.
Scotland Yard also analyzed the photo, and they determined that it was Tara. But the Los Alamos National Laboratory determined it wasn't Tara. Other experts determined that the girl's hairline and ear matched Tara, and a mark on her right calf looked like a scar Tara got from a car crash. So I think the problem that we have is, number one, we got a lot of experts.
We do.
Analyzing this photograph, but they don't agree.
Yeah.
Some say it's her, some say it's not her.
I'm sure that's where the frustration comes in, because if everybody agreed it was her, it makes it a whole lot simpler. Now we know that's her, she was in Florida. What's the next steps?
But if it's so inconclusive, are they spending resources to do both, right? Check Florida, but also check back in New Mexico, and maybe they were doing that anyway. On June 22nd, 1990, skeletal remains were found near Grants, New Mexico. A rancher found the remains in a wooded area 5 miles from where Michael Henley was last seen. The remains were tentatively identified as Michael Henley on June 28th. The State Office of the Medical Investigator confirmed that the skeletal remains belonged to Michael Henley. Authorities believe Michael got lost and died of hypothermia. There was some speculation that Michael was abducted and his body was put in this location. But Cibola County Sheriff Eddie Craig said there was absolutely no evidence of this.
So if he wasn't abducted, then that was never him in the photo. So maybe that's not Tara in the photo, if you believe he was never abducted.
After the first Polaroid was found, two similar pictures were found later. According to the Charlie Project, one Polaroid was found near a residential construction site in Montecito, California. It was determined that this type of film was unavailable until June 1989. The photo shows a girl's face and mouth covered by duct tape. The picture is blurry, but Patty believed that this girl was Tara because she had a cowlick on her right temple, like Tara, and a lazy eye. The blue striped fabric this girl is lying on in the picture is similar to the pillow in the Florida photo. A third Polaroid picture was found that shows a woman loosely bound in gauze, wearing large black framed glasses and her eyes covered in gauze. The picture shows a man sitting next to her in the passenger seat of an Amtrak train. Patty wasn't sure if this was another picture of Tara, and thought that the photo was a cruel joke. And apparently over the years, law enforcement sent photos of dead young women to Tara's family for identification, but none of them were Tara.
How disturbing.
Yeah, that would be so tough.
I mean, it's needed, right? I mean, it has to be done.
Yeah, I guess it does, but man, you talk about the heartbreak that, you know, this family was already going through, and to receive pictures, and I don't know if it was through the mail or if they were asked to come down to the station or how it played out, but every time that that would have happened, it would be so traumatic.
Yeah.
As would have been the discovery of the Polaroids. And, you know, obviously Patty believed that it was Tara in these pictures. By 1991, Tara's family had become authorized deputies. They were licensed to carry handguns, and they got permission to pursue leads and use the sheriff's department letterhead. And basically they did this so that they could get access to information.
Hey, very smart. If you can pull it off, it works in your county, why not?
I've never heard of that.
Me neither.
A victim's family becoming what was labeled authorized deputies. They mailed out over 200,000 flyers and pictures of Tara. They also reached out to law enforcement agencies around the country and even internationally. And this is something that we see in so many episodes. You have a grieving family, and they're just not going to stop at any cost. I don't care if they spend all their money, if they lose their jobs sometimes.
Yeah.
They go broke. It all comes down to finding that child.
Because that's the most important thing to them.
It's the only thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, at a certain point. In 1996, Patty told the Albuquerque Journal that since 1988, three bodies were found in remote areas of Valencia County. They were not identified. Skull fragments with two bullet holes were found on the mesa in 1988. The police found a femur by the river. An anonymous person left a tip telling the police to scoop a field south of Bellin. They dug in that area but found nothing. The sheriff's department even hired a water witch. The water witch concluded Tara was in the river. The police dragged the river and found nothing. Tara's case received national coverage. It was on Oprah, 48 Hours, A Current Affair, Unsolved Mysteries, and even America's Most Wanted covered her case. There were many theories over the years. There was one theory that Tara was a courier hired to transport drugs to Mexico, that she was peddled to a black market, that satanic cultists captured Tara. There was one where Tara was hit by a drunk driver and taken somewhere else, or that Tara ran away because she didn't like her mother.
Always going to have theories.
A lot of theories, right? In every case, some pretty far out there, some maybe a little more believable than others.
Yeah. I mean, being hit by a car.
Well, we said the broken taillight.
Yeah.
The bike dragged off the road. That one is believable to me.
Same here.
The Tara running away because she didn't like her mother. Nothing in the research made it sound like that was likely. Doesn't mean it's impossible. Just didn't seem likely. And we talk about Tara being hired as a courier to transport drugs to Mexico. She didn't seem like the type of person that would take up that offer.
Right.
Now, if she was abducted and forced to do something, that's different.
That's a different scenario.
But a theory that says she willingly took a job to transport drugs, that one's tough for me to buy.
And if she did, why would she go out that way? Why wouldn't she just come back, get her clothes, and leave? Why would she leave her home on her bike and just not come back?
Well, almost like stage something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, some more believable than others. In 1998, a judge declared Tara dead and ruled her death a homicide. Tara's mother and stepfather moved to Florida 15 years after her disappearance. Patty said that they moved because everything in New Mexico reminded them of Tara, and it would be a good change. When they moved, Patty left Tara's picture with the new owners of their home and a close friend's phone number.
Well, maybe just in case she returned one day.
Yeah, no, I get that. What seems strange to me is that you would buy a home and the seller says, would you please keep a picture of our daughter in the home? Now, maybe once you learn the entire story, you would obviously feel for them and say, yes, we'll do that.
Yeah. Or maybe pacify them just to close the deal.
Tara's biological father died in 2002. Patty died in May of 2006 after complications from strokes. Tara's stepfather and siblings are still alive. In 2008, Valencia County Sheriff Rene Rivera spoke with the Albuquerque Journal about Tara's case. Rivera had been working the case in different capacities since 1989. According to Change.com, Rivera said, the individuals who did harm to Tara knew who she was. They're all locals, and I believe that the parents of the attackers were some of the people that helped the individuals with hiding the truth or hiding the body or trying to escape prosecution.
He's not holding back.
No, the local part I get. That makes sense. But he takes it a step further and implicates the parents of these perpetrators. According to Rivera, the attackers were some of Tara's high school classmates who were younger than her. He said, she was a real pretty girl. She was very athletic, and a lot of guys wanted to talk to her. They wanted to meet her. They wanted to go out with her. And while she was riding the bike, they went up to try to talk to her, try to grab her, whatever, while she was on the bike.
It's almost like he got some inside information.
If not, then it would just be pure speculation.
Right.
So I kind of see where you're coming from. There's got to be something that is leading him to this theory.
You know, I can picture that. They come up, they grab her, she's on her bike, kind of a struggle occurs, some reason, maybe the bike gets dragged underneath, pushed underneath the vehicle. The car breaks the bike's taillight, and the car drags the bike a little bit.
Yeah, I could envision a number of scenarios. You know, maybe some younger guys were in a car. They were trying to get her attention and something bad happened.
Yeah.
Accidentally. And then they got scared and they tried to cover it up. Rivera said he had enough to get arrest warrants for two men. And two other people were identified as accomplices. He told the Albuquerque Journal, it's kind of hard to make a case without a body. You know, it's very frustrating being that there's a lot of people that know what happened. They know the whereabouts of the body or the remains. A lot of the information that we're getting is because people are starting to open up a little more. When this first happened, people were scared. People were threatened not to speak out because what happened to Tara could happen to them. He said that his informants told him Tara was in New Mexico. Rivera said, actually, it's a mystery that's getting hotter every day. Some people have this information, and they've had it for so long that they've gotten sick by hiding the information they have, and now they're coming forward to try to relieve themselves. Some of these people that were witnesses to the crime have been scared to come forward. They think that being that they were there, that they were going to get prosecuted for the death. At this point, what I want to let people know is that if there were witnesses there, I'm willing to work with them. I need to have their information. I need to be able to recover this body. So, I mean, I thought this was some interesting information put out by Rivera saying that we have enough to get arrest warrants for two men.
Right.
Okay. That must be pretty strong. But obviously, they haven't done it because in the next part, he talks about how hard it is to make a case without the body. So is it, and this is my assumption, that they could make an arrest, but they're not going to do it because the case is not going to be prosecuted. So why make the arrest? That's the only thing I can think.
Instead, keep working the case until you find
the body.
The body.
And once they have that, then they can move forward. A 2013 Albuquerque Journal article reported that Sheriff Louis Burkhart, who took over after Rivera, said that they worked with the Bernalillo County Sheriff's cold case unit, but didn't think there was enough evidence to reopen the investigation. He told the Albuquerque Tribune, since taking office, We've only received one tip that detectives followed up with, but nothing came of that. All right, these two guys might be seeing things very differently.
Yeah.
You know, Rivera says, we've got enough to get arrest warrants. This guy's saying, we don't even have enough evidence to reopen the investigation. On September 15th, 2013, the Albuquerque News Bulletin received an email from Lee Blake, a former deputy with the Dade County Sheriff's Department in Georgia. On September 14th, Blake found a missing person website with information about Tara. Blake was the first responding officer when a woman's body was found on the side of Interstate 59 on December 16th, 1988. The description of this woman matched Tara. The age was said to have been between 20 and 25. Tara was 19 at the time. 125 pounds. Tara weighed 120 pounds. 5'7". Tara was 5'7". And dyed brownish red hair with frosted ends. Tara had light brown hair. He said that if he had heard about Tara's case back then, he would have contacted the New Mexico authorities. But he noted that news coverage back then wasn't like modern news coverage of missing persons. They were never able to identify the woman. No one claimed her body, and she was buried in an unmarked grave. But the Atlanta Crime Lab has DNA evidence and her personal items. And it was reported that the FBI extracted DNA from Patty before she died in case they needed it to match it to someone in the future. In 2017, KRQE spoke with Michelle, Tara's sister, and Tara's friend, Melinda. According to TaraCalico.com, Melinda spoke about how one day over Christmas dinner, she talked with friends about Tara. She said, the response I got from those at the table who were my classmates were, oh, Melinda, the whole town knows who did it. So Melinda decided to create a documentary about the case. When she looked at Tara's file, she was concerned. She said the files were in shambles. There were files with people's names on it, and there was nothing in there. It was like, okay, now what? What do we do now? So we started investigating. Melinda said that people were reluctant to talk and that she and her family were threatened. She said that new areas were searched and that powerful people do not want the case to be solved. People have passed who have strong ties to the community who may have deflected people coming forward from talking and getting involved. I think that has made a difference. And if that were true, it absolutely would make a difference.
Huge difference.
Michelle and Melinda shared their information with the Valencia County Sheriff's Department, and they even started a podcast called Vanished, the Tara Calico Investigation. In 2018, the FBI released an age progression photo of Tara Calico. In 2019, the FBI announced a $20,000 reward for information that leads to her whereabouts and the arrest or conviction of the people responsible for her disappearance. In September 2021, investigators spoke about new leads in the case. Lieutenant Roland of the Valencia County Sheriff's Office told KOAT that a search warrant relevant to this case was executed at a home in Valencia County. But the warrant was sealed, and we weren't able to find any updates on it. But when you hear stuff like that, right, search warrant, especially when it includes the words relevant to this case. Okay, people get very interested. Now, either nothing came of it or they just haven't released the information. I don't know. Although it's been over 30 years since she went missing, it seems possible, Gibbs, to me that in this case, someone someday is going to come forward and finally tell the truth about what happened to Tara Calico. I mean, you know, when you hear her friend Melinda talk and say that people have told her, there's all kinds of people that know what happened to Tara.
Right.
Okay. Is that true? And if so, is it a situation where people are just afraid to come forward because of pressure, whatever, influence, high profile people? I don't know.
Yeah.
But this does seem like a case that I do believe will be solved. sooner than later. But that's it for our episode on the disappearance of Tara Calico. We got some voicemails. Gibbs, you want to check those out?
Yeah, I want to hear them.
Hi, Mike and Gibby. My name is Alexis. I called about a month ago about a crime. But I've been listening to you guys for a couple months now. I actually own a cleaning business, so I'm always out working. When I'm working, I'm listening, and I really like your podcast. You crack me up, and my clients look at me like I'm crazy when they're laughing. But I have another case suggestion. I actually have a lot of deaths in my family. My cousin, Aaron Arnett, was found dead in the bottom of a cliff, and it was never solved. So I thought that was pretty crazy, but I think you guys are hilarious, and I really love the podcast. Thank you. Keep your own time ticking.
All right. Thanks for the voicemail. I hate that, you know, someone has to experience so much tragedy in their family. It's not a case I'm familiar with. We could look into it for sure.
Hey, Mike and Gibby. It is Jeannie from Ontario, Canada. I just finished, actually, I'm all caught up on all your episodes on both True Crime All the Time and True Crime Unsolved. But I was listening to the Jamie Gibbs episode, and somebody, you had said your mailbag is giving you chips, Harley chips from Quebec and Montreal, and I just had to giggle because Gibby said, oh, he gets around, and Montreal is in Quebec, so I just had to giggle at that. But I love your podcast. You guys keep your head on a swivel and keep your own time ticking. Thanks. Bye.
Shocking that we would get something wrong about geography.
Never.
You know, our knowledge of U.S. geography is not all that great. I will have to admit, my knowledge is not great of Canadian geography. It's just not. And obviously yours isn't, because she's talking about
obviously
you.
Obviously mine is not either.
But did you notice how she said, I've always said Quebec, but she pronounced it more like Quebec.
Quebec?
Quebec. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I've always quoi. I don't know.
If you want to say it the French Canadian way or the
that could be
Canadian
that
way.
Could be it. I don't know.
Hello, gentlemen. This is Gary Howard, a truck driver, as I'm driving to Dayton, Texas. Dayton, Ohio. About listening to the newest Unsolved episode. I was suggesting for you bring back to Texas, Livingston, Texas. There's a case of Natasha. Actually, she went missing in 92 until her mother found the charred remains of her body. After that, nobody knows. Twists and turns, and maybe a cover-up by the officials of Livingston. I've noticed nobody's really covered it. I think there's two podcasts that has done it. Not much information. Definitely a case that needs more information out there to get solved. But yeah, 92, it is so unknown that I know where she's buried at, but where her memorial, she cannot find her out, find a grave, which I plan on changing that. She's buried right across the street from the truck stop I stop at when I go home. All right, as always, like you always say, keep your own time ticking and your head on a swivel, and I keep my tires spinning, always moving forward, rubber side down. Take care.
And Gary's always driving through Dayton.
He really is.
Yeah. But, you know, as a truck driver, would it be hard to not remember exactly what state you're in? Probably not. You're driving all over the place.
Probably get confused easy.
Yeah. But we appreciate the voicemails very much. And that is a case that we'll put on the list and look into as well. All right, buddy. That's it for another episode of True Crime All the Time Unsolved. So for Mike
and Gibby,
stay safe and keep your own time ticking.
month long on Pluto TV. Stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.